Hey guys, this is Wade for Wade for Wireless, and I am here again with, I think it's my 12th episode, I know, of my podcast, number 12. Not a lot, but you know, I try to keep things rolling, and I just wanted to make sure that I want to go over some highlights, do things a little differently than the blog. The blog cast today is Small Cell Deployment, 10 Tips You Need, and especially number 6, and I'll get into that. But what I'd like to do a little differently on the podcast is basically go over what's coming up. Two things very important are coming up. Well, important to me. Maybe you don't care. I'd like to think you do. You're listening. So here's what I got coming up. Vicky Kosiorg, who wrote the book The Tower Builder, which really is about communications towers. It's broadcast and communications, and it's really about a tower builder, the WBTAM towers in Charlotte, I believe. And what it's about, they came to two of the three towers, they're AM, okay, and there's a three tower array, and they're diamond towers, they're Blaw Knox towers, which Blaw Knox hasn't been around for a long time. They were built in the 30s, and they came down several years ago, and they were rebuilt. And it's a great story. I know I'm not exactly embellishing it or making it sound great, but I'm telling you, the book was really good. Basically, three stories. It's about Tony the Tower Builder, who is a neat guy. If you guys read it, you can really relate to what he went through. I think I could. You know, his life was very similar to mine as far as, you know, he got a career, was with a good company. The company got bought three times, had to look for a new job. He had a rough life. You know, he gets divorced. He goes through all that. I've been through that, you know, but he got everything back together. And it's like the towers, the same way with them. The towers went down. The owners decided they wanted to build the exact same towers, which were diamond-shaped towers, right? AM diamond-shaped towers. So Blaw Knox was no longer around. There were no blueprints. He had to literally take the towers that fell and measure all the pieces to try to recreate it. That's what is so interesting. I mean, it isn't like he had something to work with other than the fallen tower, the crumpled towers. So he had to measure everything, every bolt, every cross member, you know, the legs, everything. And then what also makes these towers unique, AM towers, I forget how tall they are. I should know that. But AM tower, and they're diamond-shaped, and they only have one set of guy wires. That's what makes them unique. Anyway, that'll be another week. So I have an interview with her about how she spent 3 years writing this book. And the book's on Amazon. I'll put a link in my blog. And it's called The Tower Builder by Vicky Kosiorg. K-A-S-E-O-R-G. And the other thing I have coming up, met this really cool guy on LinkedIn. Through LinkedIn I met him. I talked to him. His name's Greg. And he's playing around with the idea of getting like a toy helicopter, but it's really a drone. It's a quad helicopter with a camera on it. And he's working with taking pictures at tower sites and taking pictures of the area around the towers using his drone. Really a cool idea, guys. Not going to replace the tower worker, obviously. But what it can do is help with closeout packages, help with inspections. It can save a lot of time, you know, with inspections and things like that. And also, if you want to check line of sight or surrounding areas, I know we have Google Earth, but that doesn't always cut it. Now he can go to the tower, and I'll tell you what, years ago, I did a lot of Sprint and Verizon work. Didn't do much AT&T when they put a lot of microwave backhaul in, and we had to verify line of sight, because you feel pretty stupid when you go out there and there's something in the way. I know Google Earth is pretty cool. We all use it. It's really changed the way we do site inspections and links and the build outs for cellular, a lot of engineering, but it's that line of sight. Nothing replaces line of sight. I don't care what you say, because anything could happen. I'll give you an example. Ocean City, Maryland, did a lot of work there. We put up a lot of point to point links. They put a new building up. Well, let me tell you something. They put a new building up. Who knew? All of a sudden we noticed that the link was getting worse and worse, and we didn't know why. Obviously, I mean, you know, you just don't know. Everyone's driving around down there. They're looking at the radios. Finally, we go up on the tower line of sight, and we see new condos coming right up in the path. Well, now what do we do? And what's ironic is I think the mayor at the time was a realtor, and I think it was one of his buildings, if I remember right, that was going up. The guy was a realtor. I think I don't know if he's a developer. I know he was a realtor. And it was one of his buildings, and here he is blocking a path for his own city to communicate. And we were part of 911, but we were more than that. We did data, and we did backhaul. We did a lot of things, but it was just sort of interesting. Anyways, don't want to bore you with that. That's another story. That's a future blog. That's a future podcast. And let me get into this week. This week, I wanted to talk about small cells again. I know if you're a climber, you're probably tuning out, but I'm telling you, small cells will be in 2015 and 16. There's going to be a lot of work for that for all you wireless workers. And what I wanted to go over was some deployment tips you'll need. Now, really been into small cells lately, been doing a lot of work with small cells. And I hope in 2015 it takes off because, like I said, it'll be a lot of work. So whether you're sick about hearing about them because there's not a lot of work out there yet, I think you should pay attention because deployment's going to be a big deal. And if you listen to RCR's webcasts and webinars and things, they talk about small cells all the time and the challenges. And there have been a lot of challenges. That's why it's so slow to roll out. And I know a lot of the Wi-Fi guys are going to say, well, you know, we got Wi-Fi, we got this, we got that. Listen, small cell is not a Wi-Fi deployment. With Wi-Fi, yeah, you need backhaul, you can do mesh, you have a lot of options, right? But the engineering isn't such a big deal. Now, I'm not saying you have to do site engineering for all this, but when you put up a Wi-Fi and you interfere with three other guys' Wi-Fis, you don't care. You just don't care. You care about how they interfere with you, but the reality is you put it up, bam, we're live, you know, we'd like better coverage, but oh well. And 2 days later, someone else could put a Wi-Fi unit up real close to you. If you're putting them on poles, you could put it in the next pole. If you're putting it in a building, you could put it in the next room. Look at your houses. How many of your houses have Wi-Fi? I got Wi-Fi. All my neighbors have Wi-Fi. I go out with my phone, it lights up. You know, I can see a majority of the people that have Wi-Fi. Let me tell you, it's about all my neighbors. Buildings, you go into business, you go in a mall, everyone has their own Wi-Fi. That's the difference. So now we're talking small cells, a licensed frequency, probably multiple bands, and LTE is a big deal because everyone wants download. And what the carriers have to balance is price, because with a macro cell, you know, you're going to serve a lot of people. You're serving a large area. With a small cell, you're serving a very small area, maybe 20 customers at a time if you're lucky. Well, for 20 customers, you have to put in a fiber backhaul. You have to get rights to a pole. You have to make sure that the permitting goes through because, you know, these are carriers. They're not going to just slap it up anywhere. Maybe in a building, maybe for a business, maybe enterprise. They have a lot of femto cells, which is more or less the smaller version, and even people even buy them for their house. But anyway, a lot of deployment or a lot of issues that have been slowing it down. And I know I'm getting off track. I'm coming back now, the deployment. So what I wanted to go over, the first thing is the mounting options. There's a lot of mounting options. You can mount to a wall, you can mount on a building, in a building, by a window, inside, outside. You can mount on a wood pole. So when I say pole mount, I'm talking like a telephone pole or a pole along a street. You can also mount to a light pole, which is, you know, basically a light pole has an overhang. What's the difference? On a wood pole, you're going to mount vertical. On a light pole, chances are you'll mount out by the light, and you'll mount vertical, and you'll probably use the power from the light. And you guys think, oh yeah, we'll just use power from the light. A lot of those lights, they have different ways of turning power on and off. And this is what I want to go over. You may or may not be able to use that power from the light. Sometimes it's solar, so they just have something on the switch on top of the light. Sun's out, it's off. Gets dark, it comes on, which I think is the best way to do it. I don't know why everyone doesn't do it that way. However, many cities have timers, so the timer's a problem because chances are the timer is either on a grid or it's in the bottom of the light pole. So if you're going to put a small cell up there, you know, it would really suck if all day, like from 8 in the morning till 6 at night, you had no power. You know, that's a problem. That's a showstopper. So what you want to do is make sure that, you know, the power's on all day, all night. And the other thing is, it's really nice with solar because you just have to put a plug in. Learned that with Wi-Fi. You can just put a plug in and then their plug goes on top and it all works out great for the sensor. And I'm just throwing it out there because you guys should be aware of it. If you have to run power, you need an electrician. Chances are real good you need a certified electrician to run AC power. Now, the other mount is a strand mount. What a strand mount is, you mount it on a cable that's called a strand. Let's say you have like a lot of cable companies use a strand mount to mount their stuff. So why is that important? The strand mount, you may not have to pay rent on, not that you would, but the company would. So they're going to want to do a strand mount. So for them, it's a win-win because they're saving money by going on the strand mount. For you, what you're going to have to do is not only mount on this strand mount, which you'll have a special mount for the small cell. The small cells that I know that Alcatel-Lucent puts out are going to be under 20 pounds because there is a weight limit. That's why it's important to you. You need to know the weight limit. You need to know how much you can put on that because here's what they're going to put on it. You have a small cell, they might want a router, and then you might need an interface. The interface, what's the interface for? Well, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to go on down, but the interface is basically what the cable company is going to plug into for backhaul and for power, to power the small cell. And chances are the small cell is probably going to be a 48-volt small cell. So out of that box, it'll be a probably 48 volts that plugs into the small cell, and then you'll have a router. Chances are, depending upon the carrier, how they do backhaul, all that, they'll have a router. Then you'll have your data connection, which could be fiber, could be copper. I don't know yet. I don't know what they're going to do. You could go either way. There are options. It's up to the customers to what they want. So mounting options are important. Just be aware. If you're mounting on a strand, you might want to inspect the strand. One, make sure that it looks good, which you know, those things last a long time. Two, you might want to verify the weight limit on the strand. They have rules, but just because the rules are there doesn't mean that, you know, it can really hold 100 pounds or whatever. Usually it's 20 pounds per item that's mounted, I think. I that's off of memory. So you want to pay attention to that. The other thing, if they put 10 things on there, if you see 6 or 8 other people on there, you might want to bring that to somebody's attention. And the final thing, so you're mounting on a strand. If it's hanging too low, there is a length restriction. So if you're hanging too low and you get caught on a truck that goes underneath, that could be a problem. You know, that could be a real problem for a lot of reasons. You're either going to rip the strand out of the pole or the pole's going to come down, and I've seen it where, you know, the strands start to sag and they got caught by poles in York City, Pennsylvania, York, Pennsylvania. I saw a truck come through. He went through there before, but the strand started to sag. I don't know why it sagged. I think it was just old. It should have been replaced. Took out all the communications for the area because the truck caught on it. And of course, you know, he's just driving. He doesn't know he's caught on it. Chances are it's caught farther back. Rips the strand out. Does the strand come out completely? No. Rips the pole down. Pole breaks at the top. I mean, you know what it takes to make a pole break? I think it was an old pole. So chances are it was starting to rot somewhere. They should have replaced it. They being whoever owned the pole. I don't know who owned it. I don't know if the electric company owned it or the power company, but everything's out. The electric's out. Communication's out. Everything's out. So, all right. Mounting options. Next one is antenna options. Number two, antenna options. You're going to have to know your antenna, guys. Some of the small cells have the integrated antennas, and chances are they're either a panel antenna on each side or they just have a little stick antenna on top, and they usually have two antennas, usually have two ports, antenna ports anyway. Important to know, because if you're mounting on a strand mount and it's an integrated antenna, the antenna is going to sway in the wind. It's going to be a problem when they do their testing, you know. And it's going to be a problem with coverage, too, if it's a windy day. It just is. So I don't know how you're going to keep it steady on the strand mount. Not really sure about that. But you also have to know what direction they want the antennas pointed. If it's an omni antenna, if it's just a stick, it's easy. You know, it's a stick. You put it up, it's omni. If they have panels on there, you're going to have to really pay attention to what the site design says. You know, what do they want it? North, northwest, south, southwest, 187 degrees, what? You know, what bearing do they want? Does it matter? Yeah, it matters. You know, you're going to have to use your head, you're going to also have to know how to point it. It'd be really nice if they told you how to point it in a map down the street. You know, if they just want street coverage and you want up and down the street, great. That solves the problem. The other thing you're going to have to know, the antennas are going to have to be weatherproof. So if you have to put, different OEMs have different rules. Some want vapor seal and tape on them. Other ones might not want anything. They may have a gasket in there. Pay attention to what the OEM tells you. It's very important. And the final thing is, if it's an integrated antenna, Crown Castle and I believe Edge Connects, they're preparing ahead of time by putting boxes on the poles. So if you're going to mount a small cell in a box and the antenna is integrated, if it's a metal box, you've got a real problem. That's information that somebody needs to know if you're putting the antennas in a metal box. All you guys out there know that's a bad idea. And yet, saw it done. Some goober out there puts it in there, doesn't say anything, locks the box, walks away. You know, they got all kinds of problems. You know, I don't know if they noticed the high reflection. What they did notice is, you know, didn't cover anything. So I'm just pointing it out. So, number three, fiber termination. Guys, you're doing tower work. Chances are you're doing fiber terminations and fiber cleaning. It's a big deal. And I just saw this on another deployment where these guys were doing indoor small cells. And they just did a crappy job cleaning the fiber. You know, bunch of goobers out there. Up there working up in the, you know, probably in the insulation. They thought, you know, for all I know, the guy rubbed it in his pants and plugged it in. Didn't do the proper cleaning technique. And I'm not talking one or two guys. I'm talking out of 100 installs, there were like 65 or 70 that had backhaul problems. And of course, with backhaul problems, you guys might not know, everyone points a finger. Oh, it's the guys that installed it. It's the guys working on it. It's a backhaul. There's no connection. Blah, 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 blah. The reality was they didn't clean the fiber right, and that was a problem. Think about that, guys. 65% failure rate. I'm telling you, if you guys can learn about fiber, I put links out there all the time. I think JDSU offers a lot of classes and stuff, but learn your fiber, learn how to clean it, learn how to terminate properly. It's so easy now. Well, I wouldn't say it's easy. It's still a skill. Don't get me wrong. It's a cross between a science and an art form. And that's why someone like JDSU, no, they don't pay me. I just happen to get those guys' emails all the time. But they have a lot of equipment to make sure it's clean. Clean fiber is very important. I don't know if, you know, you guys will get the equipment or not. You know, I know how a lot of companies are. They want to spend the money in that. And the problem is you spend the money, you want to charge a little more per install. Chances are the lowest bidder wins. And they don't complain until they have a 65% failure rate and they mark that guy off the list. So, number four, training on the product. Did you get trained on the product? It's very important. Why is it important? You got to know what you're doing. You know, and I'm just going to throw out some names here. You have Samsung, you have Nokia, you have Alcatel-Lucent, and who did I miss? Ericsson. You have Ericsson. So when you're putting in their small cells, do you think they're all the same? They're not even shaped the same. You know what I mean? Physically, they're not even the same. It's not like you're putting a box in or a BTS or anything like that. You're putting a small cell in with different mounting options. And let me tell you something. If you put it in and something goes wrong, you're going to point the finger at the installer. And you're going to point the finger back and, you know, here we go with the finger pointing game again. If you're trained and certified, it pays to get certified. I'm just telling you, if they don't have a certification program, you'd better learn that product. Because the first guy they blame, the guy that does the installation. And you're going to be more than installers. I'll get into that soon, but you're going to be more than installers. I just want you to make sure you're certified in the product and you're trained and you know what you're doing. You shouldn't wing this. It's just like tower climbing. You know, you shouldn't be winging that. A lot of guys do. Don't get me wrong. Some guys are good at it. Some guys have a gift. I'm not going to lie to you. But I just think if you can get trained by the OEM and if you can get certified, it's even better. Really helps. That's what I was saying with fiber too. If you can get trained on fiber termination, big plus. Number five, backhaul connection options. Why do I bring this up? There's more in the world than fiber. You could do a copper connection, which is, you know, Ethernet, Cat5, RJ45. If you guys don't know what I'm talking about, get back to school, learn about it. Fiber connections, a lot of different fiber connections. I can't even keep up with them. They're narrowing it down to where you can, you know, there will be a few choices, two or three. But again, you guys should be learning about that. The other one is DOCSIS, which is basically the cable connection where you could have coax out there. Why do I bring that up? Because if you're doing a deployment where a carrier partners with a cable company, or if a cable company is doing a deployment, you want to know how to terminate that coax. What are they going to use? You know, I don't know. The F connectors, I would imagine they're probably going to use the F connectors. I just don't know. So it's something to be aware of. You may go to a small cell where the cable company is partnering with the carrier, and you'll have to terminate one with a coax, which will probably be an F connector. Then you'll have to either go to copper or fiber as a jumper. They may have pre-made jumpers, they may not. They may not, because you're outside and, you know, you sort of got to do it on the fly. So I'm throwing that out there. Six is street pole mounting locations. Okay. When you're at a street pole, you have different zones. Anyone who's done the installs probably knows this. I know I'm going to bore you here a little bit. You have a telecom zone and you have a power zone. And then you don't want to go below the telecom zone, because that's where they expect the vehicles to be. This is what I was saying about deployment earlier. I know I got a little expanded a little too much earlier, but don't be stupid. You got to know the mounting zones. If you mount in a power zone, it's a real problem for a lot of reasons. One, you have to be certified to mount up there in most cases. I don't know if all cities enforce that. I'm just telling you. If you're going to put it in a pole and you're going to put it like 6 inches below the power line, chances are you're going to have problems for a lot of reasons. You know, you're going to the city might give you a fine. You might have to move it. You might get in trouble. Know your zones. Know your heights. It's very important. It should be very clear on your drawings where you mount. But if it's not, pay attention. And if the drawing's wrong, I would recommend, you know, calling somebody right away. Chances are the project manager, and that's a tough call. You know, hey, the drawing's wrong. You're in a power zone. You shouldn't be in a power zone. You should be in the telecom zone. It's 5 foot too high. It's a problem. So you got a choice here. You can mount it and go back and fix it later. Carriers may or may not pay you for it. If it's wrong in the drawing, chances are they'll pay you. If you're just stupid and you mount it wrong, you're going to eat that cost. You're going to drive back out and replace it. So just be aware of what you're doing. Pay attention. Okay, if you have a small cell that you know is too heavy for the strand, I would highly recommend thinking it through. If you're going to strand mount and you mount like an 80-pound unit on a strand, it's a problem. And I would really hope you have the common sense not to do that. But just in case, you know, because that's going to cause a lot more problems. They're going to want someone to pay for the damage. So that's why six is so important. That's why I wanted to point out six. That's where you really have to use your head and you really have to make judgment calls. You really have to question the documentation. If they do everything right, hey, that's great. Everything's right. But if something's wrong, well, you know what? It's up to you to point that out. Size matters. Weight matters. Mounting options matter. Height matters. You got to know the height. You got to know the zones. So, if you've never done street pole installations before, I would ask a lot of questions. People will get annoyed, but in the long run, it'll be the best thing you can do. Pay attention to that. Number seven, router skills. The reason I brought up router skills, I'm not saying you have to be an expert on routers, but it's a good idea to know how to use your laptop to program a router, because chances are when you're out there in the field, they're working on plug and play. It's not there yet. You may or may not have to configure it. Or you may have someone in the office that pre-configured it. If they pre-configured it for a specific location, make sure it's well marked before you send it out. Because you want to know exactly where that goes. If you mix them up, you're going to have some guy in the NOC that's so mad at you, he might make you go out and move stuff around. And chances are good the router will match up to the small cell. They'll want those to match up. Maybe, maybe not. I see it as they will. The ones I've seen so far, they want everything. It's a kit. You know, you got the router, a small cell. Sometimes you can mount them together. Sometimes you can't. I'm just pointing it out. It would be a good idea. I know you're going out and numbers matter. But whether you do it or whether you have someone on your team that knows what they're doing, it'd be a good idea to have them go out there. They can either verify it if they have to, if that's part of the scope of work. If it's not part of the scope of work and they just want you to deploy, just deploy. But if they want you to verify the IP address and the router, it'd be a good idea to know what you're doing. Throwing it out there. Number eight is grounding. Listen, guys, I've seen this too. You can't do a half-assed job of grounding. You really have to know what you're doing with grounding. Again, this goes back to the OEM training. The thing about grounds, as you guys know, unless you're, well, in a tower, when lightning hits, yeah, then grounding is an issue. But otherwise, people have weird problems. What's the first thing they blame? The ground. They just do. If they don't, hey, maybe times have changed. But I'm telling you, I've already seen it with this. You know, they had problems with a small cell. They did the install. The guys, I think I saw a couple. Some guys just didn't ground it. Other guys grounded it wrong. They grounded it to like a lot of those small cells have the coating on them, the paint that's a coating. They just grounded to that and thought it would be fine. You know, you just drilled a hole in the side and thought that would be fine. Hey, you know, go to your training. Look in a book, for God's sakes. You know, understand how you're supposed to ground, what the proper grounding is. A lot of these things, they may want two or three grounds on them. If you're in a strand mount, you have to figure out how to ground it. If they say don't ground the strand mount, great, one less thing to worry about. But let me tell you something. If there's no grounding on there, again, the finger pointing goes back to the installer right away. Nine, RF knowledge. Why do I bring up RF knowledge? Goes back to the antenna options. If you mount your antennas in a metal box, you're going to have problems. Don't be stupid, okay? You guys, I would like to think, especially all you wireless workers, if you're doing small cell deployments and small cell engineering, use some common sense. Ask some simple questions. If you're going to do a Crown Castle deployment, they say we have boxes on the poles. Ask them. Metal boxes, plastic boxes. Where should we mount the antenna? Do we mount the antenna low? Do we mount the antenna high? Where do we put the antenna? And if you're working with a designer, with the engineer, I said designer, actually meant engineer, ask them, where should the antenna point? If they're panel antennas, do they point up and down the street? Make it very simple. If the guy comes back and says, why would an azimuth of 183 degrees? And then you look at it and you say, dude, it's pointing right into a building. Is that where you want it? Maybe you want building coverage. And maybe they do. But just be aware of what it is. Learn to read a map, okay? Learn to read your compasses are tough in the city, but chances are most of you will have a GPS. Just pay attention to what you're doing. If you do the installation exactly how it is on the paper, no one's going to blame you. They'll point the finger and say, what were you thinking when you were out there? And you'll say, I was thinking I was doing what I was told. And right here it is in the scope of work. That's what you're going to say. And then they'll say, you know, they may come back with some crap answer. But the reality is, you did what they told you to do. If you question it up front and they still said do it, who's going to argue with you, right? You did it. Number 10, acceptance testing. Acceptance testing. What does that mean? That means now your role for small cells is going to expand a little bit. You're not just going to install something and power it up. They'll probably want you to do some type of testing because it's going to be awfully foolish if you go out there, power it up, walk away, and the thing doesn't work. They can't talk to it. The backhaul doesn't work, blah, blah, blah. We could go on with all the problems. But the reality is they're going to want you to probably take a phone and test with it. And that's what you're going to do. You're going to walk around with your phone. It's simple. It's a walk test. You just walk around, make sure it works, make sure it connects. The NOC connects to your phone connects to the NOC. Everybody's happy. And when I say your phone, it's not going to be your phone. It's going to be a special test phone because chances are they'll bring it up on a test frequency or a test band or whatever. Now, why am I bringing that up? You're on site. You just installed everything. You powered it up. You ran power, whatever, you know, however. It's powered up. So now they want to make sure it works before you walk away, because if you walk away, and then make sure, by the way, when you do bids on this or quotes, make sure you build in time for this and you ask about this. This is very important if you're bidding on a job. I don't know how many of you guys are running your companies, but if they want you to do testing, when you power it up, it takes a little bit of time to integrate. When I say integration, it should, when you power it up, if the backhaul is working, oh, by the way, if the backhaul is not connected or not working or not turned up, that's a problem too. So it has to be coordinated for that. So when you plug in, power up the small cell. Small cell comes up. You get out your test phone. You should see signal. Signal's good. And then you should be able to walk around and you should be able to see the data. Data's good. And then that's when they'll have you. Chances are there'll be an app on the phone. Alcatel-Lucent has an app, I'm pretty sure. So you'll do an upload test. You'll do a download test. If Volte's working, most of these are going to be LTE. That's why I say that. You'll do a call test. Call through to the NOC or whatever. I would imagine it'll do a call test. But for the most part right now with LTE, it's going to be upload and download test. And you're going to see what the data is, bit error rate, and things like that. They're going to rely, chances are good, they're going to rely on you, the deployment team, to do that. I can't see them sending out a second guy to do that. They might, you know, I don't know. If the backhaul doesn't align with the deployment, they'll have to. Because, I mean, what are you going to do? You're not going to sit there and wait till the backhaul. I mean, it could be a week or two or a month. That's why this is not as easy as you think. So, but I'm just pointing out to you guys, your role is going to expand. So you're going to be relied on for more tasks. Let's hope they pay more for it. And when you do bids or your company does bids, just take that into consideration. Make sure you read the scope of work carefully. I know in my book I wrote about the scope of work. That's a key thing. You need to understand the scope of work. You need to understand what you're going to have to do. And if you are going to do pole mounts, I'd highly recommend taking out some spare parts. If you're going to do strand mounts, maybe take out an extra mount or two if you can. You know, it might be worth your while to keep one or two in the truck in case there's a problem, there's a screw missing, a bolt missing, the mount's bent, the clasp is bent, whatever. Be prepared, okay? So that's it, the top 10. And the reason number 6 is so important is because if you are going to mount on a pole, it just pays to know your zone. Street poles, I think, are going to be the bulk of the mounting options out there. And not just in the cities, but, you know, they're going to do suburban environments as well. And I don't know what they're going to do out in the countries, but I know in the suburban areas, they'll probably still mount on poles, and the zones are very important out there. And you can see it, you know, when you're driving down a lot of these country roads and you see the poles. Usually, you know, the electric's on the top, then you have telecom, and then you have cable, okay? So it just pays to be aware of what you're working with. If you got to work in a power zone, make sure you're trained to work in a power zone. Make sure you're certified to work in a power zone. You know, pay attention. Don't be stupid. All right, guys. That's it for this week. You got the blog out there, wadeforwireless.com. If you read it to the end, I also have another thing. Some guy sent me something about certification tags for safety gear, rigging, steel cables, things like that. I thought it was sort of cool. The guy just reached out to me on LinkedIn. But they have a lot of free stuff out there if you want to sign up for it. I thought it would be a good way to label your ropes, your cables, things like that. I don't know if it's any good, you know. I'm just throwing it out there because I thought it was really cool. And I thought you guys would appreciate it. Has guides, things like that, things that may interest you. All right? Okay, to finish it off, be safe, be smart, and pay attention. I got that from Vicky Kosiorg's book, Pay Attention, because that's what Tony says. You got to pay attention. And actually, I think that's a better way to say things. Pay attention. When you're on the job, pay attention. And I have a quote in there, Robert Kiyosaki, he's a writer. He said, focus stands for, the way he looks at it, focus means follow one course until successful, which I think really applies in your work. You have to follow the one thing you're doing until you're successful, until it's complete. I mean, that could mean a whole lot of things, but in your case, if you're on the tower working, you want to follow that job until you're complete. If you're climbing up, you want to make sure you climb up, use your safety gear. Make sure you're up safe when you're climbing down. Use your safety gear. Make sure it's on all the time. You're 100% tie off. Nate's promoting that for a reason. We don't want any more fatalities this year. None. That's your goal for the year. And that's where I think we should focus. Even though I bring up all this communications work, all you tower climbers out there, all you radio engineers, all you broadcast engineers, all you RF engineers, we need to focus on safety first. And everything else will fall in line. We got a lot coming up, a lot of work. Macro cell, small cell, a lot of deployments. We're going to have decommissioning coming up. So I just want you guys to be safe, be smart, and pay attention. All right, signing out. See you all later in the week. Bye.